Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we today are going to be talking about all kinds of critters. If you're like me and you love animals of all types, well, Stephanie Leland is a woman that you're going to want to know more about. Her fabulous book is called Random Acts of Kindness by Animals. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Great to be here.
It is, and I have to say, it is such a joy to be able to pick up a book like yours and to read these stories about animals. But before we go into discussing these various stories in your book, I'd like to share with my audience a poem that is right in the very beginning of your book.
Okay.
And it goes as, "What separates the beast from us? Our hands, our brains so ponderous? What makes us feel superior? We walk on two legs, they on four. Abandon, even pets go feral without love. We, the world in peril. Through brutish greed, forests we ruin and make sweet paradise a dune. As animals respond to kindness, we humans need help with our blindness. We mustn't be so quick to judge. We, too, must all be tamed by love." That poem, where did that come from?
Yes, I wrote that poem.
So this is yours.
Oh, yes. And that encapsulates the feeling that I have in writing this book. I feel we can take lessons from the goodness and kindness that we see in our animal friends, and we need to take these lessons. We're at a point in our own history where we have to realize we have to make a return to love, or we're in a lot of trouble here. And one of the reasons I wrote this book was because people often say, oh, you know, this world is kill or be killed. It's eat or be eaten. And in doing research for this book, I discovered there's truth to that. I'm not denying that that is part of life. But it's also true that kindness and consideration and compassion and love are very real parts of all the kingdoms, our own, and also the animal kingdom.
That is so true. And it is amazing to me how people can walk through life and not be able to see it.
I know.
You just can sit out in your own backyard and watch the interaction between birds. You can look at squirrels. You can look at raccoons. You can look at so many different creatures. And it's true. Nature is not kind and wonderful. She can be a very hard taskmaster,
mm-hmm.
and all species have to kill to live, including us. We're not exempt from that. We're part of the animal kingdom.
Right.
However, when the human being says, I'm superior to everything else in life, they're really, I think, missing the boat, because it takes all of the different levels of life to make this world what it is. And if we think that any one is more important than the other, we've got a real big misconception, and that's catching
up
with.
When I was writing the follow-up book to this, Animal Angels, I was in the position of noticing that the world can get along very well without me, but without worms to aerate the soil and to turn rock into soil and the things that they do, the planet wouldn't be able to go on. So just to sit and think for a little while, I mean, if you ever want a lesson in humility, you really don't have to look very far for it. You just sit and think for a minute, okay, the world can get along without Stephanie Leland, but worms, it needs them badly. So that kind of thing just makes me kind of put things into perspective.
It is rather humbling, isn't it?
It is very humbling.
Very humbling. But let's go into a little bit of a conversation about Doris Day.
Yes.
Now, for the real younger generation, they may not be aware of Doris Day, but she was not only a gorgeous, very, very famous woman in the 50s, 60s, and even in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
She's an animal rights activist and has been deeply involved with this for a long time. Is she still alive?
Yes. Yes, she is. I think she's in her late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But she's living in outside of Carmel, California, and she still takes in animals and feeds strays and has dogs and has a whole compound. I've never been to her place, but she's rather famous in that area for taking care of her animal friends.
Now, she wrote the foreword to your book. What an honor to have a woman of such a prestigious standing and such a compassionate nature. How were you able to get her to do that for you?
Well, I think it was her intrinsic love of animals when I presented her with the idea of this book, with the concept of it, and gave her the rough copy. She was moved to say a piece about it, and she, of course, talked about her own dog, Tiny, who was with her when she was a child. I think Tiny saw her through times of illness, and that's one of the things that is remarkable to me in the process of writing this book. One of the things I personally learned, that many people think their own animal is incredibly special, and your own animal is, and like the most important and precious dog or cat or bird in the world, and that's true, but we tend to think that not all creatures are that special, that somehow we've just gotten a special one, and when we think in those terms, it enables us, in a sense, to just not be as kind and considerate to all animals. In other words, as human beings, we will do something to an animal that we have not met personally before, whereas if someone did the same thing to our own dog or cat, we would be horrified because we know the specialness of our own animal companion. And when I read again through these stories, and for me, each time I read my book, even though I supposedly wrote it, you know, it's still an amazing, I mean, I did write it, but it's still amazing to me to hear these stories again and again. Again, they take me back to the universality of kindness and compassion. We do not have all the kindness and compassion on earth in the human kingdom. It spreads out through the animal kingdom, through birds, through fish, through all sorts of. There are stories in my book from all sorts of kingdoms, and that's one thing that personally helped me with my life, to realize that kindness and compassion and even spirituality run through all the kingdoms here on earth. We don't have, we're not the only ones who can do this.
Now, your book, you said, started over 10 years ago, and I love the story about how you got a phone call. I mean, this book was not even in dream state, really.
Right,
it was just,
right.
This was the beginning of your putting this book together. A woman called you on the phone and told you a story about farm animals.
Right.
And she became familiar with you through some medium, and then after that story was told, she said she had been wanting to tell that story for 30 years, and that got you started on this. Can you tell us what her story was?
Yes. She called me and told me about two dogs that were neighboring dogs, Brownie and Spotty, and like all dogs in farmland, they would just play together every day. They had different households, but they'd play together. And, in fact, they had a path worn between their two houses in the field. And one day, Brownie's family noticed Brownie hadn't returned home. Well, this didn't bother them too much because he had disappeared before. You know, he would go roaming. And they didn't really look for him. But he didn't show up the next day. And by the next week, he was still missing. Well, Spotty, his friend, showed up at Brownie's house finally alone. And he was barking, and he was whining, and he was pestering the family, and they just ignored him because they were busy with their lives, and they just thought he was nervous. Well, one morning, Spotty just refused to take no for an answer. And he planted himself in front of the dad of the family and just barked and barked and barked. And finally, the man got the message, and he realized he had to follow Spotty. So he did. And he followed him for quite a distance. I think it was something like half a mile. It was quite a ways away. And when he got there, he found that Brownie was alive and one of his hind legs was crushed in a steel leg hold trap.
Ugh.
And he was horrified. And, of course, he wished that he'd taken Spotty seriously earlier. But then, and this is where the story takes a turn that just, I'll never forget it. The dad noticed something else. He saw that there was a pile of old bones around the trapped dog. And later, on inquiring with Brownie's, with Spotty's family, he realized that these bones were all the table scraps and remnants of all the food that dog had been fed all week. So Spotty had been visiting Brownie regularly in a single-minded quest to keep his friend alive by sacrificing his own comfort. He had brought him all his meals. And because he had disappeared for so long himself, I think we can assume he stayed with him. He protected him from predators. He snuggled with him at night, kept him warm, and kept his spirits up. Well, I have to tell you, Donna, there is a happy ending to this. Brownie's leg was treated by a veterinarian, and he recovered. For many years thereafter, the two friends were still seen chasing each other back and forth along that well-worn path between the two homes.
It's a fabulous story.
It changed my life.
Oh, it's wonderful. And I've seen behavior like this among creatures. So when I went through your book, I was just nodding, saying, yes, this happens. And I know that there are grizzlies out there in life, and yes, they do attack critters, and yes, there are the coyotes, and there's the wolves, and, I mean, every one of us on all levels is a predator of type, whether we have to feed on animals or whatever is around, whatever's available. That's just the way nature has been structured. But again, it doesn't mean that they're not compassionate, and that's what your stories are all about. It's not creating woo-woo land. It is really telling the truth about animals interacting with humans and also with each other and other species. There was a man that raised a pet deer. And I love this story because, now, people don't go out and get your own pet deer. This is not something for everybody to do. But the man obviously understood deer. And it was so tame that it rode in a car with him. And the deer would see hunters out because in this part of the country, that's what they did. They had their hunting season because the deer herds often will just become huge. So it's a form of culling, and I understand that too. But this was a story that was quite interesting, this pet deer and a hunter.
Yes, well, to start with, I just love the image that when it was a young deer, it actually used to like to ride in his truck with him like a dog. And they would be going down the street together, and you know how you sort of, when you're driving your car, you kind of glance over at who the driver next to you is. And these hunters would be going out to kill deer, and they'd look over, and there would be a deer in the passenger seat, just very calmly looking back at them. And, I have no way to know what went through their heads at that moment, but something must have gone through their heads, like, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe even some of them thought, well, maybe I'll just, you know, go out and watch deer or something instead of actually killing them. But, yes, you're referring to the story of when the deer was a bit older. It actually came upon a deer hunter who had gotten lost in the woods. And the deer was just sort of went up to him and nuzzled him, and the hunter was completely confused and disoriented. And he had nothing to lose, so he sort of thought, well, maybe I'll just follow the deer. Maybe somehow I'll get out of my predicament of being lost in the woods. And he did, and the deer led the man back to the house. And someone opened the door. The deer casually walked into the house, and the person who lived there gave the hunter directions how to go back to the main road, and the deer just fell asleep on the couch.
Like, I did my good deed for the day. That's the way it goes. Animals have a wonderful sense of telepathy. They have their own way of communicating. They do not speak as we speak, which, my goodness, what they would say. Perhaps it's a good thing they don't sometimes because of what they are aware of, but the truth is animals communicate telepathically.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that is so important, and they pick up on people. That's why I have a great deal of trust of my dogs, for example. We have Scottish Terriers. If my Scotties do not want anybody to touch them and really get agitated,
oh.
I watch that person. There's
oh.
something going wrong
uh-huh.
in the environment, and I may not be able to see it physically,
right.
but they are picking up on it. And I've had many experiences like this. But you talk about a puppy who went into Sing Sing, which is a maximum security prison.
Oh,
and yes. he was nicknamed Rags.
Rags, right.
And that just amazed me that they even let the dog in, but he managed to figure out a way to get into the prison.
Well, not only that, he was the prisoner's dog, and he decided that himself. He would he loved all the prisoners, but when the guards were around, he would growl at those guards. He really just took sides at this time, and the prisoners were his friends, and the guards he didn't trust them, just like your terrier doesn't always trust everyone
mm-hmm.
he meets either. And he would play with the prisoners, and when they had softball games, he would run around the field and bark and everything. Well, the story that you're referring to is that is of a prisoner who was denied parole, and he was completely discouraged. He thought there was no reason to go on with his life, and so he had decided to take some sheets and tie them together and hang himself. But Rags, the dog, did something he never had done before. He wouldn't spend the night in the prison usually. He came in and he sat outside this fellow's prison cell. And every time the man would make a move to get up to get the sheets, Rags would growl. And the more he tried to move, the more Rags would growl. So he realized that if he really started to go along with his plan, the dog was going to start barking and throw a fit, and the guards were going to come. So this had a twofold effect. The next day when he got up, he told everybody, that dog saved my life. I was going to kill myself, and the dog stopped me. But the other thing was that at last he realized that there was somebody who actually cared whether or not he really died, and that was Rags. And he felt he was going to choose to live, and he did. Sometimes it just takes the love of one being to make you recognize that life is worth going on with, and life
mm-hmm.
is worth living in our most difficult times.
Right, especially if you're, you know, then he, like he was in Sing Sing prison.
Yeah.
I mean, this
right.
was a man that may not ever see the outside of that prison. Sing Sing was really hardcore criminal
yeah.
that
right.
would have occupancy there. So this story with this dog and the fact that the dog was able to get the concept across, really, really very interesting.
Yeah, there's a sort of a fellow story of a prisoner who, a bunch of prisoners who were taking care of a bird, and they all loved the bird, and one day they couldn't find the bird, and there was a great uproar, like everyone had to be searched. And they found that one of these criminally insane, they had labeled him, hardened criminals, was being transferred to another prison that day. And he couldn't bear to leave the bird behind, so he had snuck it into his duffel bag in the hope that he could take it with him. And I love this, because here's somebody who, you know, committed crimes against humanity, and no one else had been able to get through to this person. But a little bird meant so much to him that he was willing to, you know, smuggle him out like somebody might smuggle out a jewel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most precious thing in life to him. That was his bird. So we often hear stories of prisoners or mentally ill people or people who are depressed or whoever. They can't be touched by any human being, no matter how much they try. But the just sheer, simple love of an animal or a bird or another being that's in a completely different type of body, they trust that, and they can be they can reach them in ways that we can't.
I agree. In fact, some of the most successful rehabilitation prison programs for people that have lost their way, if you will,
right. Right.
I know we have a prison facility here in the state of Washington for women, and the women have gone, many of them have gone through healings of because they work with dogs.
Mm.
And they will work with these dogs. They're responsible for the dogs. They have to earn the right to be able to do this, number one. And when they do, then they are totally responsible for the animal. And the transformation in the women is just incredible. And the same thing has been done with prisoners in other facilities. And it really makes a difference because they have to focus on someone else or some other creature, making sure that they are trained and taken care of. And, of course, all of this involves responsibility and being able to make that connection. So when they are adopted, these animals that are so well taken care of, and, of course, this is overseen by other people as well, but they tell the stories of how these animals have such an impact on the psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really makes a difference. And, of course, all of the therapeutic programs that it took so many years to allow animals into facilities for children and for those people that were elderly and maybe dying. And it's absolutely amazing, whether it's a bird,
right,
a fish, a dog, a horse, you know, it just makes a difference and turns people around. Speaking of that very factor, there is a story in here about Toto and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Cherry Kirtan.
Right.
And this is just fabulous because Toto was a very, very special chimpanzee. Now, chimpanzees are known for their intelligence. Tell Toto's story.
Well, Cherry Kirtan, which was the man's name, he was on, he fell desperately ill with malaria, and he was in a place where he couldn't get help, but he could, he had quinine on hand. And Toto would bring him his glass of quinine, the medicine that he needed to control the disease, and while he was recovering, but before he could rise from his bed, Cherry would signal Toto that he wanted to read. And Toto actually learned to, by himself, I guess, to go over to the bookshelf, and he would put his finger on each book until finally the man said yes, and then the chimpanzee would pull the book out of the shelf and carry it over to his patient. And sometimes when Cherry fell asleep with his boots on, Toto would remove them for him. And I'd like to read to you something that Cherry himself wrote. In 1925, he wrote in his diary, "It may be that some who read this book will say that friendship between a man and an ape is absurd, and that Toto, being only an animal, cannot really have felt the feelings that I attribute to him. They would not say it if they had felt his tenderness and seen his care as I felt and saw it at that time. He was entirely lovable."
This is something that with technology today and with research being done by literally hundreds of people going out into the wild, the gorillas,
mm-hmm,
they find that they're very intelligent, they're very gentle. You have a renegade every once in a while, but they're a very strong family unit. We are becoming aware of that intense connection among critters.
Right.
The wolves, wolverines, all kinds of cats, again, the gorillas, the pandas, the bears of different types. There's so much that was assumed before.
I know. I'm looking at the bottom of one of the pages in my book. The book is interspersed also with little quotations that some philosophers and other people have said about animals. It's just refreshing to know we're in good company when, you know, we're in the company of people like Albert Schweitzer and, you know, many, many great people who have really revered animals throughout their lives. But I look at this one, and it says here, "The scientists have found that rhesus monkeys refuse to pull the levers that deliver their food pellets when they see that pulling the lever also delivers an electric shock to a fellow monkey." Now, that, when you really sit and think about that, that means that An animal will give up its own food if it realizes that in doing that, it will hurt one of its own kind. It will hurt its brother monkey, for want of another term. And these sort of stories, they're just amazing to me. I understand that animals will do acts of kindness, but there are all sorts of stories like this where an animal will go out without its own food or without its own creature comfort or whatever it needs to help another of its own kind or someone of another species. It won't commit acts of cruelty unless, like you say, it needs to do so for its own food or something like that. But there's another part of nature that we as human beings have been turning our backs upon. And the reason I feel it's so important that we get this out is because I've watched, like we all have, so many times I've seen kids on television who have taken the wrong path and they become delinquents in one way or another. And when we inquire how they got this way, they will say things like, well, it's a jungle out there, and this world is kill or be killed or eat or be eaten. And if we only look at that part of our existence on Earth, we could reach that conclusion. And I feel it's very important that we start to look at other aspects. There is a thread of kindness that runs through everything. And this is what has always amazed me about the book, that the individual animal very often will rise above even its own instincts to help out another creature. And if animals can do this, then certainly we humans can do this and even more.
I would agree with that. You have a quote in your book by Henry Beeston that I really like, and I'm going to share that. But before we go to that, because we're getting close to being out of time, you have some wonderful suggestions in your book, you know, ways to make a difference in life. And one of them is, if you have an animal that plays in your backyard, try planting the herbs pennyroyal, rosemary, fennel, and rue along with eucalyptus trees to act as a natural flea repellent.
Mm-hmm.
Not only will it help keep your backyard free of fleas, but when your animal sleeps or lies in these herbs, the oils will discourage any fleas from staying in their fur. You go into how to keep birds from flying into your windows. Well, I know that's happened. I don't have a huge bay window they fly into, but when they're squeaky clean and the sun's shining,
right,
they just see something and they're curious and they come into it. So that your suggestions about having outlines of a hawk shape and
right,
streamers and chimes and all of this, you've got so many different things. Let me share this paragraph here because I really like what Henry Beeston said. The animal shall not be measured by men. In a world older and more complete than ours, they move finished and complete, gifted, with extensions of the senses we have lost or never attained, living by voices we shall never hear. They are not brethren, they are not underlings, they are other nations caught with ourselves in the net of life and time, fellow prisoners of the splendor and the travail of the earth. What a phenomenal statement he made.
Beautiful.
Beautiful statement. Now, your book, again, is called Random Acts of Kindness by Animals.
Right.
Stephanie, where can people find more information about this? By the way, Tippi Hendren on the front of your book says this book is a loving tribute to all creatures, great and small. And this is another very famous actress who played the beautiful blonde in Psycho.
The Birds.
The Birds, excuse me. And it was a psychological thriller of thrillers. But Tippi has a sanctuary for animals that she, I believe it's in California, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. And she just is an adamant supporter.
And if you want to find out more about her website, you can look up Tippi Hendren on the Internet, of course. And she'd be happy to share some of what she does.
And the website, you would need to go to Canary Press, C-O-N-A-R-I Press. You don't have a website, you said to me. And
right,
you've got two books. There's this one and another one.
Animal Angels. Yes, which is kind of the follow-up to this. It goes in a little bit more detail. And I believe this book is being released again in September. And I would suggest that people go to their local bookstores and request it. Again, it's called Random Acts of Kindness by Animals. And I'm Stephanie Lalande, L-A-L-A-N-D. It's great. Also, people love to read this to their children just to give them an idea that kindness and compassion run through everything.
Absolutely. Stephanie Leland, Random Acts of Kindness by Animals. Thank you for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.DelphiInternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I would be delighted to give you some intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers to call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So, just give me a buzz if you'd like to chat with me. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and after that, just let me do my thing. If you have a question or a comment about something else, you can do that too. Doesn't make any difference to me. Now, I do want to let you know that Teresa Tapp is going to be with us tomorrow, and you can always go to her website, ttapp.com, and find out a lot about Teresa. But we're going to be talking about special areas on the body that maybe you want to spot reduce, contrary to popular opinions that have been promoted for years. You can do something to do that spot reduction. So we're going to be talking about that. I've gotten some emails from people that have been listening to us and saying, Donna, this really works. So tomorrow you're going to find out. If you've never heard about Teresa Tapp, you want to tune in, because if you're like me and you want to stay toned and you want to look good in your clothes, and it doesn't make any difference what size you are, you can make a difference with your body without unnecessary pain and suffering. Then on Friday, we're going to be talking with Marie Jones. We're going to be talking about a year that, well, as we get closer to it, there's more and more conversation about it. What year is that? It's 2013. Marie Jones is going to be my guest, and we are going to be discussing what she has found in her research about that year and how the Mayan calendar is associated with it. So we've got a great lineup next week, Haunted Spaces, Sacred Places. Brian Houghton is going to be my guest, and this is a man that travels around the world and has done a lot of research regarding these particular environments all over the globe that are respected and appreciated by so many different cultures. Then we're going to be talking about Enron on Tuesday, Innovation Corrupted. Malcolm Salter is going to be my guest, and this is going to be fascinating because this is research on why Enron went bad, and it's going to a level and a depth that you wouldn't even imagine was possible. Wind power next Wednesday. Christopher Gillis is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about this so-called free power, but there's many different ways to use it. We will find out from Christopher what the latest is on that. The nonverbal advantage, body language, how can you use it? What can you do to be able to understand it better? Well, we're going to share some insights with you. Carol Kinsey Goman is going to be my guest. So that's our lineup for next week as well as this week. And tell your friends. And don't forget, all of the shows are archived. So if you should miss a show, then you'll be able to listen to it later on at your leisure whenever you want to do so. Tell your friends about that too, because again, BBS Radio, we're right here 24 hours a day. And those shows are always available to you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. When I first started out studying so many different points of information regarding the psychic self, the intuitive self, whatever term you're most comfortable with, I found so many different concepts and ideas. And for a long time, I think like so many of us are, we want to be locked in a box. We want it black and white. Well, that's one thing that when you get involved in the study of the mind, you find there's no black and white. It's a rainbow. And in fact, it's a rainbow of such extensive color variation, you're often just awed by it all. Well, one of the people that was my mentor was a Reverend Floyd Humble. Now, he passed away a few years ago, but this was a man who taught me something called reading flowers. And what I did in many of the classes that I taught in the past was to ask my students to bring in an arrangement of flowers. And I'd say, you must do the arrangement yourself. And then when they'd bring it in, I would read the flowers. Now, you might say, how can you read flowers? Well, flowers are living things, and you as a living being choose what appeals to you. Reverend Floyd Humble was the one that taught me how to do this. In fact, it was in one of his classes that I did it, and I just fell in love with the concept of using flowers as a way to get insight into other people. And there was a gentleman that I learned about many years after that fact. His name was Vero Mento, and he had traveled all over the country. He'd have people draw flowers. Well, I preferred using the living flowers, and I can remember more than one situation where I would be out of the room, and I'd tell the students, I said, I'm not coming into the room. The class will begin, let's say, at 7 o'clock, and you are to have all of your flowers on a table that will be set up, and that's it. You make the arrangement. You pick the container. You choose the entire arrangement that will be put on the table. And what was so much fun is that I would do readings on those flowers. I would talk about the individual. I would tell what's going on in their lives, give them information about what they themselves were conveying by what they chose. And what was so amazing about this whole thing was the accuracy of it. And people would say, this is just phenomenal. How can this be done, and how can this be done so accurately? And I said, whenever you're working with living things and you are choosing these live flowers, I said, no artificial flowers, they must all be live, you are putting a part of yourself in that arrangement. Even if you picked an arrangement that you just fell in love with in the refrigerator in the grocery store, you're choosing it for the reason that it resonates with you. Reverend Humble had told me when I was in his classes, I'm going to back up for a minute here, that one of the most profound experiences that he had when he had done this in another class, and this was a few years before, he said a woman had brought in beautiful red roses. She had cut them just about a half hour before the class. By the time it got around to reading her roses, the roses were totally dead. And when he read those roses, he said, "You're suffering from tremendous grief." And he described what the flowers represented to him. He said nobody else's flowers in that room had died that rapidly. None of, they were all bright and perky, typically. He said, "This tells you how when you're in grief, you affect things around you." And so there was quite a discussion. And when he relayed that to me, that registered in my head. And I thought, that's very interesting. Believe it or not, when I had one of my classes, there was someone that brought in flowers. And here they were, and there must have been at least 30 people in the class. So here were all of these arrangements of flowers. And here was this beautiful arrangement of colorful, colorful roses that had these particular purple flowers on them. Those purple flowers, and I don't remember specifically right at the moment what type they were, they had died. The whole arrangement that this person had put together was dying right in front of our eyes. And his story popped into my head when I was looking at it. Now, what was interesting is that the colors that she had chosen and the type of flower that this represented, all of these things come in to form and actually spoke very loudly to me about where this person was emotionally. And I related to it. Now, some of the flowers hadn't done that. And someone might say, oh, well, maybe they got out of the water, you know, but the stems were in the water. And everything had just been cut a little bit of time prior to coming to class. So I shared with her my perceptions. I also shared the story about Reverend Humble. And this woman started crying. She was just in a very, very difficult space. She was going through a divorce and was having a terrible time. So she was grieving in her own way. And many times purple represents injury. One of the things that Reverend Humble taught me, and I share it with you because I believe that what I was given by the teachers in my life should be shared with you openly, because that's the only way the knowledge can be carried on. If you study nature and you study colors, you will find that nature will tell you what those colors mean. Why is it that green is so important? Why is it so valuable to have green plants in an office? Not just because it helps to clear the toxins out of the air, but green is very soothing. When you're in an office environment and you can have a lot of green, it's refreshing to the eyes. It makes you feel better. It's a healing color. But if you look at nature, you'll find there's all different shades of green. Certain shades indicate a vitality and an energy. Other shades indicate a patterning of illness, believe it or not, and weakness. Every color that is has literally thousands of variations to it. And when we are able to learn, if we will study nature, as Reverend Humboldt used to say, if you want to do the readings of the flowers, you need to learn about the flowers, the environments that they grow in. What kind of care do they need? There's a persona around every living thing that will tell you something about you and maybe give you an insight into the people that you find you are comfortable with, you're not comfortable with. It's really quite fascinating. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, if you'd like to chat with me, fine. Otherwise, if I have the time, I'm going to share some insights that an Asian woman by the name of Victoria Cass shared with people regarding flowers. Of course, this time of the year, oh, we just have so many beautiful, beautiful types that are out there. So I'll be sharing that with you when I come back. Otherwise, give me a call if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, 530-876-3222. Now, don't forget, if you have a special story, a special recipe, anything that you feel that you'd like to have me informed about, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. What I'd like for you to do is put in the subject matter, The Donna Sebo Show. Just put that in, and then that way I will know that it's related directly to the show. I love hearing from you. I love to hear your comments and any suggestions you might have. I'm open and receptive to it. So please do send me an email if you have something special you'd like to share. If there is anything that you feel that I need to be made aware of, go ahead, send me an email. And it's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. By the way, my travel schedule will be coming up shortly. In the new newsletter that will be coming out the first of the month. So we'll be giving you an update on where I'm going to be in the coming months. You'll be able to get all of that information. And if you'd like to get a subscription to the email newsletter, which is free, all you have to do is send me your email. Also, all you can do, you can go right into my website, and you can read all of the past newsletters. You'll have everything there. So it's available for you. All right, let me share with you what Victoria Cass, who has really got a passion for flowers. She said there's a language of flowers. And if any of you are aware of this, China is considered the motherland for just about every species on the face of the earth. And this is something that they have been doing some research on for a number of years. And I happened to watch a program, and the name of it just, it was on the History Channel or one of the cable channels. And a man had gone over to China to try to go into certain areas because he had heard how so much of what we enjoy, the rhodies and, oh, so many different flowers, actually were already in China centuries ago. And so by people going into China, long before Marco Polo, they would take these out. They'd take the seeds out, and then they would grow them in different places, and that's what happened. Trade with China was going on a long time before anybody really recognized it. So he found, to his amazement, they're still discovering species in China that they didn't even know existed. So it's quite interesting. So the Chinese have a phenomenal background with the different levels of horticulture, and they really love their flowers. Peonies are wonderful flowers. Not only are they magnificent, there's so many colors, but in China and Japan, peonies are a metaphor for female beauty, fertility, and reproduction. It is also strongly associated with peace and prosperity. And this is something that is very, very important to the Asian cultures. Now, there was some research that was done at the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Foundation that when people would smell the sweetness of a peony, they found that people became less anxious. And they said, when you give a bouquet of peonies, there is a wonderful message of appreciation and beauty that is received by the recipient. So keep that in mind. I know in my neighborhood, peonies are not typically in grocery stores. I mean, that's not the common flower. But if you have a garden and you want to grow these beautiful, beautiful flowers, they're absolutely wonderful. One of my favorites is the hydrangea. And it is, in Asian culture, a representation of enlightenment and a desire for the acquisition of knowledge. And, of course, hydrangeas just have these beautiful, beautiful, abundant bouquets of blue flowers. And then as their cycle goes out, then it turns into green. But their leaves are large and lush. And they take a tremendous amount of water. We have more than one in our backyard. And interestingly enough, we have one that is the most gorgeous pink. And it all has to do with soil. If you have an alkaline soil, they will go into a color. And then if you have an acid soil, they will be blue. But there's purple hydrangeas. There's all different kinds of colors. But typically the most well-known, I think, is the blue. Now, what they find is that if you want to feel less stress and you want to boost your concentration, the color blue has really a tremendous impact. And if you had blue flowers around you, it's going to be very comforting. Now, chrysanthemums. These we see everywhere. They're in grocery stores. They're in so many places. And chrysanthemums are a hardy flower. They're just beautiful with these large, multi-petaled arrangements that are just gorgeous. And the colors are just so vivid. Well, this represents stability. The chrysanthemum represents stability. And the gold chrysanthemum, especially the yellow golds, make people feel very optimistic. Well, stop and think about sunshine. Sunshine is bright and golden and our perceptions, and it does. It brightens you up. Yellow is a color that, dependent on the shade, can really invigorate you. I know one woman who was a teacher insisted on her rooms being painted in yellow. And man, you stayed awake in her class. She used a bright yellow. But colors are important, and that means that you will feel very optimistic. So if you're inclined maybe to get sort of droopy, fall is going to be coming in before we know it, and the gray skies here in Seattle, we have so much of that. When you have the brighter colors around you, it's very invigorating. Orchids. Orchids are amazing flowers. They're hardy, and orchids, when they're given, really do mean a lot to the recipient. The giver typically will recognize their delicacy, they're exquisite. Sometimes they're fragrant, sometimes they're not. But they last for such a long, long time. They are just amazing. If ever you have a chance to go to Hawaii, oh my goodness, the orchids on the different islands are just absolutely amazing. Irises, in Eastern cultures, the three upright petals and the drooping sepals, the lower petals, represent faith, valor, and wisdom. And they're often given as a gift before someone takes on a new endeavor or embarks on a journey. And the most common color of iris is the color of purple and violet with a touch of yellow. And that seems to increase the frequency of theta waves. In the research that's been done on this, they find that the brain waves that are in the theta level link to creativity and resourcefulness. So those are just a few things, but you can check it out. You can check on all of this. Have fun with it. It is something that is just invigorating, and it will give you an insight into yourself as well. What are your favorite colors? What do you enjoy in the arrangement of flowers? It tells a story. They are living things. They're an expression of us on so many levels. This is Donna Siebel. Tomorrow we're going to be getting in shape with Teresa Tapp. And this is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy this day. Enjoy the beauty of everything that's around you. It is a gift, and it is yours to savor to its highest level. Donna Sebo here. I'll be here tomorrow at BBS Radio, same time, same place. Tell your friends. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.